WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome to the program. You're listening to It's Your Turn, WISR, 680 AM in Butler. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. Great to have you aboard on this Thursday, November 16th, 2017. We've got a jam-packed program for you today. We've got a number of guests. We've got two sitting in front of us right now, so we won't hold them off too long. But later on in the program, we'll talk with Gene Collier of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's got an upcoming comedy show at the Conequenessing Country Club in Beaver County, so we'll chat with Gene. We'll talk with Dave Bestwick. He's a co-owner of Recon Brewing up on top of Route 8. We're going to dive into some beer. We're going to get into the whole discussion about the whole process that works there.
I hope he brings us samples.
That's what I have my fingers across. And then we'll talk with some folks, or actually Tracy Morgan will talk with some folks from the Butler Memorial Hospital's Behavioral Health Department, and they focus on mental health. And we're going to talk about OCD, Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. And Tracy will dive into that conversation. But first, because we do have a jam-packed show, we don't want to keep them waiting much longer. It's Dale and Millie Pinkerton. They are joining us here on behalf of the Butler PM Rotary Club. And we were talking off air, Dale, you guys are keeping busy.
Yeah, we stay extremely busy. Rotary is doing a lot of things in the community. We just had the Life Steps Pancake Breakfast, which is always done on Election Day. And in the morning club and our club, we pulled that off, and it turned out to be a great day. And we had the participation was real good. And, of course, all the money that's made at that goes to Life Steps, which takes care of from babies up to seniors, and they do a fantastic job.
And Dale, it's just not breakfast. You were there till 8:30 p.m.
I wanted to ask you how that went, because I did stop. It's so cool that it's a tradition for a lot of people in this county.
Yes.
And, yeah, whether it's early in the morning, I mean, it's open the same time the polls are open. Mm-hmm. You were happy with this year's turnout? It looked great.
Yeah, we were. It's not nearly as busy when it's not a presidential election, but we still did very, very well, and it's a plus for Life Steps because their clients all get to come to that too. So it gives them a day out, and a lot of them help us, and it's really a wonderful thing.
It was. The door I walked in, there was some people there directing. There were some clients directing and taking ticket sales. They are so sweet, and it is so nice to get them out and talking to everybody that comes and visits.
Yes.
And they really like pancakes.
And who doesn't? Who doesn't?
And so, Dale, you are a past president of the Rotary Club, but now the honors have been, I guess, moved over to you, Millie. You're now the president this year.
I am. That's what happens when you have a really busy, well-known husband. So, but I am a member of Rotary. I just joined 4 years ago, but I've been with Rotary since Dale joined in 1982. So I just decided 4 years ago I should really be there as a member too. So,
and you guys talk about coming off the pancake breakfast, the benefits, Life Steps. Now coming up, it seems like you guys just stay busy 365 days out of the year, but this seems to be a little bit more of a particularly busy time for you guys because of the Rotary Turkey Roundup. This has been going on for quite some time, Millie.
1991, and Dale instituted this in Butler County on a whim. Yeah, he went to a meeting and God got involved, and along came Rotary Turkey Roundup. So it's been 26 years since 1991. We've raised about $475,000 that goes to Butler County food banks, to the church dinners. So, you know, it's mostly Christmas, but there are some churches who request meat vouchers for their baskets for Thanksgiving. So that's what we do. We give every church or food bank a $10 gift certificate to put in the vouchers. And they request the numbers.
Okay.
So that's how we do it. We get the vouchers from Freedmen's. Our club pays for them. And then they're put in the food baskets.
Dale, you've really been the face of this.
Yes,
why did you start it? She said it was on a whim. What happened?
It really, and probably people have heard this before, but I went to a meeting one night, and two women got up and talked about the food bank in Portersville Prospect, and that they had five families, and they needed $150 a month to take care of those five families. But the story they told was there were a couple, and they both had had pretty good jobs and lost them, and then they were both working for minimum wage. They had five children, and they called the food bank on Wednesday and said, "Do you have baby food?" And they said, "Yes," and said, "Could we borrow some till Friday?" And here they were they went to the food bank, and of course, they ended up being a client then because they were so under, they had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But they gave them the baby food, and the other four kids were going to eat peanut butter on bread for those 4 days, or those two more days.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home and said to my wife, "Write a check for $150, send it to this address, and we're done with it." Well, I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was kind of on my mind, and I said, "You know what, Lord, I don't need another job." And I rolled over and went back to sleep. The next night, exactly 4 o'clock, I woke up again. I'm looking, it's one of those clocks that says the numbers, and I said, "Wait a minute. I told you, I'm not really into this." Well, the next day, or the next night, I woke up at exactly 4 o'clock. And I said to the Lord, I says, if this is to work, I need the radio station and the newspaper to help me. And so we did that, and we had lunch, and they both agreed to help. And I went to a meeting at Natilli's, and who was there but Armstrong Cable. I told them about what it was. They said, "Go home, put a suit on, we'll do an ad on TV." So that's really how it started. And it's all the Rotary Clubs in Butler County.
Because there are several.
Well, yeah. There's Zillionople, there's Evans City, there's Portersville Prospect, there's
Cranberries.
Two Cranberries, mm-hmm. There's Richmar. Okay. And we all work at it. And we do as much as we can in each community in their mm-hmm. food banks and so forth. But it really works. And we're almost have raised $500,000. We're approaching it, so in the next year or two we'll hit $500,000. It all goes to the food banks or the churches that have we try to give it where it's needed so that it helps people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about.
I know that you mentioned in that one story the family who they both had good jobs and then lost them. I think that's important because when you think of people who visit a food bank, I think people have a picture in their mind of who they think is visiting, but it's not always that. I mean, it can be people, you know, that have great jobs that ran into hard times. It could be your neighbor. You know, I've covered so many stories, and it could happen to you. It could happen to somebody you know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And mm-hmm. People that have had that and then go in for food stamps and so forth, a lot of them are really feel bad that they're doing it. But as soon as they get back on their feet, they move on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a place where we can help people through the tough times.
And how can people donate to this?
You can donate by sending, and we ask for $15. And people used to say, "Well, what does $15, how can you raise that kind of money?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, $15, and if you take 500 people that give $1,500, you get a lot of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One lady's already sent her $10 in this year. She's always the first lady. And a business sent $500 the other day.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's all over the ballpark. I've received as little as a dollar and as much as $1,500 from businesses and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you give? You send it to Rotary Turkey Rondoff, P.O. Box 1081, Butler, P.A. 16003. And no matter what you send, it's something that's going to help others.
Yeah, I like that. Even if you only have some people want to help, they only have a couple dollars. But like you said, a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there, pretty soon it adds up.
Mm-hmm. When we owned our store, we were right at the bus stop, And we looked up one day, and there's a Santa getting off the bus. And he walked into our store and said, "Here, Mr. Pinkerton, I want you to have the money that I made today being Santa."
Mm. Wow.
You know, it's really amazing. But the people in Butler County are really very generous.
And how long does this run till? So, like, when is the last time someone could make a donation?
Well, we actually run it up through the end of December.
Oh, okay.
Because there are people that have give towards the end of the year.
Sure.
And,
mm-hmm.
and they've set it on a pile somewhere. We accept it any time, but
yeah.
it kind of is over towards right after Christmas mm-hmm. normally.
Okay.
And I think people should know is that our club has a foundation. So if
okay.
they do send this money, they can take it off because mm-hmm. they're sending it to us, and we put it in our foundation account.
Okay.
So they do get credit for it if they want it, like if a business wanted to send
mm-hmm. a substantial amount.
Yeah, that it's a...
Okay, cool.
Yes.
And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dale and Millie Pinkerton. We're talking about the Rotary Turkey Roundup. It's going on right now. It's its 26th year of it going mm-hmm. on, helping others have better holidays. But Millie, I want to reset a little bit because when we talk about Rotary, you know, someone like me, I'm familiar with the term Rotary. I know there's a lot of these. But what exactly do you guys do? What is the Rotary's mission? You know, when you get together, why would someone want to join Rotary? Let's put it that way.
Rotary's motto is service above self. And we're passing out dictionaries right now to third graders in the Butler County school system. And we asked a little guy that at Dasa McKinney. And he put his hand up and he said, "Well, that means that you like to do things for other people instead of doing them for yourself."
And that's ding, ding, ding.
You're right. So it's like, wow, this is a third grader.
Wow.
So what we do, we meet the second and fourth Monday of the month at the YWCA. This Rotary Club has been in existence for over 100 years.
Oh, wow.
75 years.
97. We got 3 years to go to 100.
No, not 97. Can't be. Yeah, well, it's 97 years.
Once anyway, you get past it's like almost, 10, it's all the same.
It's a lot of years. And it started out with just business people. But now we have people from all walks of life. So we have the meeting. We have a speaker. But in between times, we do the pancakes. We do Rotary Turkey Roundup. We do the Distinguished Service Award dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We do a dinner for the clients at the YWCA at Valentine's Day week. We have our caterer cook the food, and then we all come in with our significant others and spouses. We wear black pants, white shirts, and we serve them their dinner.
Oh.
We give the ladies a rose and the men a boutonniere, and we have a guy who comes and plays the keyboard. And there are several men in the Rotary Club all the women want to dance with. So we do a little something for them. But we do highway cleanup. The billboards coming into town that have...
Oh, yeah.
Our club did those, and we pay to have the grass cut around them and the maintenance for mm-hmm. that. So
it's a little bit of everything. Then.
It's a little bit of everything, and it goes on year round. We're doing the playgrounds in the city. We completely redid Institute Hill mm-hmm. 2 years ago. Last year we did Christie Avenue South Hills Playground.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we hope to do some things down on the island. We have to go to the city about that. But one of the things why we're doing that is there are so many kids in the city who really need, especially during when they're off of school during summer.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make a safe place for them. So we tried this summer. We had two interns through Big Brothers, Big Sisters and the Y. And those two interns, we actually had one who could come in and fill in if they needed help. They came at 10 o'clock, stayed till 3, gave the kids lunch, organized play, and just were there to be a buddy for kids, and it worked very well. So mm-hmm. we're going to try to do that. We're going to tack on two more playgrounds this year, but we pay their salaries.
Okay.
Our club pays the salaries. So it's constant, and luckily we have Mr. Dale Pinkerton who helps us raise money with a golf outing that we do every year. He's the chair that funds a lot of the extra things. So it's just, we're just doing something mm-hmm. for someone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working. We work with with companies. We work with grants. Dennis Baglier has been unbelievable at coming up with people to help with the playground projects. We might spend $150,000 worth of money, but we may only cost us $75,000 because businesses and people give of their time and effort to put it all together. And, you know, the Morning Club did the Purple Playground up at Alameda Park, which is always full. Mm-hmm. And it's, you talk about a project that was really a great project, and they did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids love it.
Yes. I mean,
you can go up there in the snow, and there's kids up there doing
mm-hmm.
it. So.
I live right by that area. It really, I mean, it's like the gem of Butler Township. I mean, it is beautiful. Mm-hmm. The playgrounds in the city, too. I mean, I just think that's just going to give to that area for years and years and years to come.
And that's what we're hoping for. Because the kids are our future. We need to take care of them. So.
Mm-hmm.
But the AM program, the AM club does the ice sculpturing. Every Rotary club does something huge, and then they use that money for service above self.
Yeah.
That's what we're about.
If somebody's listening, maybe a younger person who wants to join, I don't know what your membership looks like, if you're getting the young millennials or not. Do you just invite them to come to a meeting, stop by, talk to you guys?
Absolutely. Stop at the YWCA on the second or fourth Monday of every month. We always have a speaker, and we have dinner. We have a caterer.
And we'll buy your dinner.
Yeah,
we'll
buy
your dinner. You go.
So, and we have interesting speakers who come. This past Monday, we had Mark Gordon, who's the new employee at the county, who is doing fantastic things in the county. So, you know, there's always a speaker who does something that people want to hear about. But please do come. We'll be happy to have you.
Dale, you've been obviously a part of Rotary for quite some time. You know, if someone was thinking about joining, what would you say they could potentially get out of it if they were to join?
You know, it's funny you say that, because when you originally joined, you know, you joined, used to be that it was just businesses, and you did it to talk to other businesses and that kind of thing. But once you got involved and you really realize what Rotary does, it's fun, because we do a lot of things for others, and it's a joy to do it. You know, sometimes you think, oh no, I got to do this again or that again, you know. But you know, when you think about all the good things that happen because of it, it just makes you feel good. If you really, monetarily, you'll never get anything out of it, and it isn't that. It's what you get out of it. It's a really good feeling inside about what you've done to help other people, and that's really what Rotary's all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, whoever said that it was better to do stuff for others than to do it for yourself, I think that's right, especially this time of year.
Exactly.
There's a very smart third grader out there somewhere.
Yeah, yes. We got to interview him next.
So anyways, Rotary Turkey Roundup going on right now. Dale, one more time, if people are interested in joining, if you could give out that address.
Donating.
Right. Excuse me.
It goes to Rotary Turkey Roundup, P.O. Box 1081. Butler, P.A. 16003.
Yes.
That's, and you said there's no minimum donation.
No,
this can be anything.
There is not.
Okay.
And it can be as much as they want to give. It could be $1 million if someone wanted to give it.
We'll see who's listening to the show. Maybe we got somebody.
Millie, any more final thoughts as president of Rotary? You know, just to make a if listeners, like we said, are interested in joining, what's your, not argument to them, but say, this is why I did this?
I did this because all of my life I've been community minded, and I've always done things, but I've never really physically, like the playgrounds. When we put the playground together at Institute Hill, we actually put the playground together and we painted, and we got rubber chips. They can't do that anymore. We got the chips for the bottom, the ground, and you know, you rake the chips. And up at Institute Hill, we painted, we climbed ladders, and you make, my best friends are in Rotary, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's just a, in this time when a lot of things are all about me, I think it's good for us to step back and do something for somebody else, because as Dale says, it just gives you a feeling in your heart that, that you can say, wow, I did that, and you know, now the kids are going to have a nice place. Or, mm-hmm. you know, I help serve food to these people. Mm-hmm. And we not only, we sit and talk to them, and it's just a good feeling. And I think no matter what age you are, it's a good thing to do.
They're Dale and Millie Pinkerton, Butler PM Rotary. They meet every second and fourth Monday, 5:45 at the YWCA. They're at 120 West Cunningham Street, Butler, PA. And like Dale said, you get a free meal. So there's some incentive to stop by. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you
so much for having us.
On the other side, we will talk with Gene Collier. He's a writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and he's going to be near Butler County this coming weekend. He'll be at the Conoquinesson Country Club doing a stand-up show that benefits the Zeelanopal Public Library. We'll chat with them next on It's Your Turn, WISR 680 AM.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Did you know that Pennsylvania leads the nation in auto collisions with deer? Not a surprising fact if you live in Butler County. It's obvious that your car and the deer are damaged, but what about you? You may have injured your neck and not know it. An impact of only 8 miles per hour is enough to cause soft tissue damage and mild whiplash, which is not uncommon after striking a deer with your vehicle. If this happens to you, visit Applewood Chiropractic Center today for treatment of acute and chronic whiplash. Applewood Chiropractic Center, Thorn Apple Drive in Butler. Call 724-283-0518.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Welcome back to the program, listeners. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey on WISR. We head out to the phone lines to bring in Gene Collier. He's a columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, also stand-up comedian, and you can see him this Saturday, not too far from home. He's at the Conoquinesson Country Club, along with his son Sean Collier and Colin Chamberlain. The event benefits the Zeelanopal Public Library. You can get tickets at eventbrite.com or at zeelanopallibrary.org. Gene, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm good.
The first question I wanted to ask you, Gene, is, you know, you're writing, a huge fan of your writing. When did you start to make the move into comedy?
That happened, I think it was 1998. I was doing some different things for the paper in that era. I moved out of sports a little bit, and I was doing more kind of general topics. And one of the things I got to cover was the Montreal Comedy Festival. So I went up there and I bumped into a guy, a Pittsburgh comic by the name of Buzz Nutley, and, had some, did a story about him. And then, when we got back from there, a couple of months later, he called me just kind of out of the blue, said he had a show, in McKees Rocks, and did I want to do, you know, 5 or 6 minutes in front of him. And I always thought that that would be something I would like to try. And I had been on, WDVE radio for some years, and doing some humorous things, and had some success at that. So I thought, well, yeah, you know, I'm going to try this. And that's when it started. I guess it was October 98.
Do you get nervous when you go up on stage?
Yes, but, you know, usually 2 beers takes care of that. You can't do comedy without beer. That's just physically impossible. But yeah, I'm nervous every time. And you know, the veteran comics that I've opened for, you know, Billy Gardell, people like that, always say that, you know, you should be nervous when you go up there. The few times I've done it when I was not nervous for whatever reason, my confidence was high or whatever the reason for it, I didn't do well. So apparently you do better with it if you're nervous.
Gene, you focus a lot. A lot of your columns are on sports, and one of my favorite columns of the year is the Trite Trophy column at the end of the year. So we're getting close to that time, and I do a few broadcasts myself, and I've always tried to avoid the cliches you talk about. Are there any front runners on the list right now?
Well, you know, a work in progress is having a big year, Tyler. Everything seems to be a work in progress. And Behind the Chains, also, another big year for, you know, trite consideration. But, you know, if I drop some of the parameters and some of the so-called rules of the trife, It Is What It Is would win every year. As it is now, It Is What It is the only two-time winner of the Trite Trophy, the Archie Griffin of the Trite Trophy, if you will. But it could win every year. People love to say It Is What It Is, because the literal meaning of It Is What It is I don't know what to say. That's what that means. It's just buying a little bit of time until they think of something else to say. It Is What It is completely meaningless, which is one of the main qualifications for the Trite Trophy. You have to be meaningless. It's essentially like saying strawberries are strawberries. It gets you nowhere. And another phrase that's very similar to It Is What It is going forward. This is the way we're going to operate going forward, or how should we do this going forward? If you take going forward out of any sentence, the sentence means exactly the same thing. It's amazing.
What about At the End of the Day? Has that ever been nominated?
The End of the Day is a former Trite winner. At the End of the Day sprang up, for some reason, out of the contested 2000 election. And I think the person most responsible for it is Brian Williams on NBC. He started saying that, and by the end of that controversy, as you know, the contested election went on for like 6 weeks. By the end of that period, almost everybody you saw on the street had an At the End of the Day thing. It's also pretty meaningless, unless you're going to do something literal like, at the end of the day, I'm tired. Now, that means something. Otherwise, it usually doesn't mean anything.
We're talking with Gene Collier, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette stand-up comedian. You can see him this Saturday night, Conequenessing Country Club. Tickets at Eventbrite.com. One of my favorite television shows in Western Pennsylvania is The Nightly Sports Call. And from my understanding, you were on last night?
I was on last night and the night before. I'm on twice a week. And it's been a great source of comedy. If you admit to watching The Nightly Sports Call, please come out to this show, because I'll give you some really behind-the-scenes stuff on what's going on there on The Nightly Sports Call. The major point of which is I am so tired. One of these nights on The Nightly Sports Call, I will fall asleep. So I think that's why people are watching, to see if the camera goes to me, and I am fast asleep, really.
You'll be working with your son, Sean, a part of this show. How neat is that to be working father and son doing a comedy show?
Yeah, it really is cool. You know, Sean was an actor throughout high school and college, and he got into improv when he was at Penn State. But after that, he kind of became really comfortable as a stand-up. He'd seen me do it for a number of years, and he started trying it. And now, really, you know, he's a lot more successful at it than I am. He's getting a lot of work. He's really funny. And it's, I think, for people to see it, to see us back-to-back. You know, Sean always kids people. He says, if you like someone telling jokes, and then someone else coming out and telling jokes in the exact same voice, this is a show for you.
We're chatting with Gene Collier, columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, stand-up comedian. How tough is it to write comedy? And you do it sometimes in your columns. I find that to be extraordinarily difficult.
Well, yeah. You know, it's something that works for some people, some writers, and for some it doesn't. And people tend to get discouraged at it if they think it's not working. And the hard thing about, you know, writing for, doing comedy for print, Tyler, is there's no immediate feedback. Unless someone comes up to you, you know, the next day or a couple of days later and says, oh, I saw that, that was really funny. You just don't know whether it's working or not. Whereas, you know, on stage, you know right away that you're not funny.
You were at, I believe, Butler County Community College a few years ago doing a commencement speech. What was that like?
That was tremendous. I was so honored to do that. I noticed I've never been asked back by them or anyone. But I just thought that was a great honor that someone, particularly, you know, college men and women, you know, would sit there and listen to me talk. I haven't gotten over it to this day. I thought that was such a cool thing.
What's your favorite sport to cover?
You know, it's still baseball, but baseball's kind of wearing on me. As is everything. I mean, you know, it's not them in particular. But I broke into the business as a baseball writer, and I still find baseball the most compelling thing to write. It seems to have the most possible angles, if you will. You know, still some interesting people in it. It does get tedious from time to time, and that's starting to annoy me. But, you know, as I said, no more than everything else is annoying me.
One of the things we've been talking about on the show really this whole week is basically an evaluation of the state of journalism. And we had Bill Mushi on from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We talked to him about it. I wanted to kind of get your idea on where journalism is today. You know, the newspaper industry, you know, upcoming journalists, how the industry is going to look moving forward.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad to hear that you had Bill on, and he's an excellent journalist, and I have great respect for him. You know, the transition that journalism is in right now from, you know, a kind of limited exposure, print exposure, network news exposure, you know, 30 minutes of primetime news to a 24/7 news cycle has completely changed the dynamic of what is and isn't news. And we're in that transition right now. You know, for example, you know, 30 years ago, you would never have heard of, say, the Kardashians. You just wouldn't have heard of them because they don't do anything and they're not important. So why is anyone paying attention to them? The reason people are paying attention to them now is the TV never goes off. It's on 24 hours a day. There's this thirst for information. It doesn't have to be useful information. So there used to be something, Tyler, called a news hole. The news hole was finite. Only a certain amount of things fit in it. Usually had to be important. Now the news hole is a black hole, and people are throwing stuff into it constantly to just kind of keep feeding the beast. And that's the transition that journalism is in. There is still great journalism. We see it every day in the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal and plenty of other newspapers around the country, including the Post-Gazette, which is one of the best papers in the country today. And they all have digital platforms now, and those are all very useful, too. It's just a matter of, you know, what's the source of your information, how much can you trust it. But journalism will always be important. What it's struggling now is to find, you know, a consistent source of funding to make a really important societal function sustainable.
So you don't think the Kardashians are contributing to the national conversation?
I do not. I'm not afraid to say it.
I appreciate those bold takes. We're talking with Gene Collier. He's a columnist for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, stand-up comedian. He is in, or rather near, Butler County. I'm not sure if Conequenessen Country Club is in Butler County. Do you know?
Might be Beaver, I'm not sure.
Okay, but it's awful close. You can see him along with Sean Collier and Colin Chamberlain. That's coming up this Saturday night. It benefits the Zelianople Public Library. Newspaper, do you think it'll last? Like the actual print version of it.
Yeah, well, one of the things that has really helped the Post-Gazette is that we're in an area where demographically it really skews to older people. Older people like to hold the newspaper in their hand. They like to take it into Denny's or wherever they go. And that's really helped us over the years. But the Post-Gazette has really also been at the forefront of the digital transformation. You know, we have a new app now, PG Slide. You know, anything you can find in the newspaper, you can now find it actually in more depth online. But as far as the, you know, utility of the paper, I mean, everyone has seen this kind of fade. And that's just because of the, you know, the deadlines and, you know, the amount of time it takes to print and deliver the paper. You know, the news has moved so fast that, you know, the relevance of it, you know, has suffered. And eventually, you know, they'll all be gone. But, you know, I still think they have a while to run. At least I hope they do.
Comedy influences for you?
Mine are the kind of old standard guys, George Carlin, Robert Klein, Richard Pryor, Rodney Dangerfield, Bob Newhart. Those are the people I kind of grew up listening to. And those people, particularly Carlin and Robert Klein, what attracted me to them was that what they were saying just sounded so smart to me. I admired their ability to, you know, deliver it in a way that, you know, didn't make people feel bad. It made them laugh, and laugh at themselves and laugh at the material. I always thought that was just a cool job.
Do you think comedy, and there's like this ongoing argument, comedy was always meant to push the limits of, you know, try to find where that line is or maybe establish that line. Do you think that is getting skewed a little bit just because, I don't want to use the term PC culture, but a lot more is censored than what used to be, at least it seems in terms of comedy. Do you find that to be true?
I think comedy has kind of maintained its space, you know, within the culture wars. I think most people understand that this is an area, a comedy club, where just about anything goes. You know, if you're walking out of a comedy club offended, you know, you probably shouldn't have gone. It probably wasn't for you before you walked in there. So I think it's still, you know, a very creative space. It's one of the last spaces that you can go and people turn off their phones and watch live performance. And I think it's very valuable. I think it's critical to moving the culture forward and to have that kind of free flow of ideas and often outrageous ideas. I think it has a really important role in the culture.
During your day-to-day interactions, is there anything in particular that really annoys you?
I was just saying the other day, you know, I just turned 64 over the summer, and I guess 64 is the age at which some things that younger people say are beginning to annoy me. I was never this way before. I was always cool. I was a cool dad. I answered to dude. You know, I was down. But lately, some things people are saying are starting to annoy me. For example, a young person said to me recently, they just asked me where I live. I said Ross Township, and they said, okay. And I just thought, okay. You're damn right it's okay. I've lived there for 30 years. Where does that come from? And I also noticed a lot of young people, maybe you find yourself doing this, Tyler, is when they answer a question, they will start with the word so.
Mm-hmm.
And I, so, no, like you'll say, how's your mom? They'll go, so, no, wait, stop right there. So goes in the middle of the sentence. You don't start with so. Like, you know, I ran out of bread. So I went to the store. That's where so goes. You know, like last night I got drunk, so I called the nightly sports call. That's where so goes. In the sentence. Those kinds of things are starting to annoy me. I don't know why. And it annoys me now, too, when I hear on TV, you'll be watching a show, and they'll say, well, give it up for Bruno Mars. Give it up for Heather Abraham. I'm sorry. I'm not giving it up. I don't even know what it is. But I'm not giving it up just because you say so.
Going back to the Trite Trophy, other language that sports color analysts use that doesn't make any sense. Do you have any phrases that come to mind?
Well, the one that really still irritates me a lot is you'll see in football a receiver jump high and make the catch, and the play-by-play guy, or sometimes the analyst will say, what he did there was he high-pointed the football. No, he didn't. Because the highest point of a pass is usually like 30 feet in the air. Nobody's high-pointing that.
Gene Collier, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette stand-up comedian. You can see him this Saturday night at the Conequenessing Country Club with Sean Collier, that's his son, and Colin Chamberlain. The tickets benefit the Zelenopel Public Library. You can get them at eventbrite.com or zelenopellibrary.org. Any parting shots, Gene?
No, I just really appreciate you having me on, Tyler, and I hope we have a good crowd on Saturday. We always have we've always had a good time performing in that area. We've done a number of shows at the library. We did some shows at the Strand, and always enjoy the people up there.
He's Gene Collier. You can see him this Saturday night. We'll be back with more right after this. Well, the holidays are coming, and that means your office will start receiving tasteless tins of popcorn, boring baskets of fruit and nuts, and a plethora of 2018 calendars. Ugh. Give your clients something better, something memorable, and something that says Butler. Like a custom gift box from Cummings Candy and Coffee, you can choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials. Add in a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Call Barry for your corporate order. Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in three locations.
DBS Telecommunications, a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving Butler in the Pittsburgh area. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. DBS has been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years. They specialize in phone systems, in custom-designed networks, including fiber optics. They specialize in high-quality hybrid digital systems, 5-year warranties. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems, multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging. They also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. We use DBS Telecommunications here at the Butler Radio Network. We've utilized their services for many years. For more info, call them today, 724-285-9088. They're also on the web at dbs-tel.com.
Welcome back to the program. Big thanks to Gene Collier for coming on. Always a good chat with him. And now we're going to switch gears a little bit as we're getting close to the weekend. It's actually my beginning of the weekend right now.
Yeah,
I'm off
yeah.
tomorrow, so you
yeah,
got
yeah.
one more day. So I'm not thinking beer, but now I'm in that mindset. You know, we're on to the other side of the afternoon, and so here we go. We're going to get into a little beer conversation with Dave Bestwick. He's a co-owner of Recon Brewery. Have you been there yet? It's up on top of Route 8, North Main Street, right across from the Dairy Queen, and that's a little bit different. You know, you can get one place, go get a Blizzard, and the other place you can go get a craft beer. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Yes. Good to see you guys.
Great to have you here. So, we wanted to bring you in for a variety of reasons. But, Kayla, you had a question right off the top that it's something that I don't know if it bothers you, but you really have an interest into why people do this.
No, it doesn't bother me. I'm glad they do it. No, I think it, I mean, we've seen the independent breweries popping up. You're the third one to come in Butler. I heard their fourth one coming in, mm-hmm. in Conequenessing. Well, it just always interests me. Like, you have a career, you're a firefighter too. Did you always want to start a brewery, or kind of what was that thought process when you did get with your partners and say, okay, we're going to open a brewery, we're going to do it in Butler County?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good reasons to open a brewery. I think, you know, beer makes people happy, and all three of us like to make people happy. So that right off the bat is always a good start. But, you know, we've always had a desire to kind of to be our own bosses, and we've looked at a lot of different business opportunities over the years, and we just really couldn't put our thumb on what we wanted to kind of go all in and you know, mortgage the farm and go for it. So Toby and I both travel a lot for work, and we're in 300 or 400 different microbreweries a year around the country, literally, you know. So just one night we were sitting around, and Nathan's been homebrewing for a long, long time, and he had made something that was outstanding, and we're sitting there having a beer, and Nate kind of looked up and said, man, someday it'd be really cool if I had my own microbrewery to brew beer in. And the light bulb went off, and we were like, yep, yeah, that's it. So it just kind of built from there, and started looking at buildings and got serious and started filling out papers and meeting with banks, and it progressed from there. So it's been a good process.
Your turnaround time was rather quick, it seemed like. Take us through that process.
Yeah, it was. We were pretty proud of that. So I think we LLC'd in the spring of 2016. We'd already started looking at buildings, finally decided on our location that we're in now, you know, picked that as the home. and closed on that building in the middle of August. And then by the time you get the engineers and the township and all these folks involved to actually get your permits to start renovation, it was November. So we started renovating the building in November, and we actually probably could have opened March, April. Got into a little bit of a snag with our equipment manufacturer, our brewing equipment, so it pushed us into May. But the goal was always a year, so we'd always told people we'd be open by August, and to open in May was, we were proud of that. That was quite an accomplishment.
What's the story behind the name? It's Recon Brewing.
Where'd
that
Brewing.
Come from?
So we wanted to do something that was kind of the history of Butler, and Butler's known for the Bantam Jeep, and we were trying to tie it into the Bantam Jeep. And you can't use the word Bantam in the alcohol market because there's a Bantam Cider Company in Massachusetts that, that already claimed that name. So we couldn't name it Bantam anything, which was kind of the goal. And then we stepped back and said, well, what was the Bantam Jeep's job or mission? You know, first mission it ever did was a recon mission, a reconnaissance mission. So the Bantam Jeep goes out, you know, do a little recon work, and it just kind of stuck. And then the more we kept saying recon, you know, so when we travel and we're going to breweries and seeing what lighting we like and what beer glasses we like and what chairs we like, we joke and say, oh, we're doing a little bit of recon for the business. And, you know, just kind of built from there. And it just worked. You know, so it pays a little bit of tribute to the history and the town that we grew up in, the Bantam Jeep being part of that.
Breweries seem to be more popular now than they've been. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know my history. But they seem to be very popular now. You mentioned how many you go to. Why do you think that is?
Nationwide, I wouldn't be able to answer that. Locally, I think, you know, Butler's always been a really strong community to support local business. I think we take a lot of pride in that. I know I do as a resident of Butler Township. You know, we want to support the local people. So that really helps the local breweries, I think, and the local businesses especially. You know, the folks would much rather come into a local establishment where you know the owners live next to you, they work next to you, they volunteer in the community with you and support their business. As far as the beer goes, you know, I'm of the opinion I'd rather spend an extra buck and drink a really good beer that was made in a smaller batch that someone paid extra close attention to make sure that the quality and the flavor and everything is just right. And that's no disrespect to the big boys, but the big boys don't do that. You know, they're making so much beer so fast, so quickly. Their goal is to pump out volume, where our goal is to pump out quality.
Were you worried at all that the market here in Butler, and I know you're not in the city, but you're close to it, was already saturated? Because you were the third one. You know, we got Reclamation and Butler Brew Works. Did that concern you at all or not really?
No, not even a little bit. In fact, you know, when we talked to Ben and we talked to Nick and Travis at Butler Brew Works about what we were doing, they were both really excited. And the thought behind that is, you know, when there's three breweries within 2 miles of each other, people that might live in Pittsburgh or might live in Wexford, and I mean, it happens every weekend, New Kensington, even all the way into Ohio, they say, you know what, let's drive the hour. We can hit all three breweries while we're there. Or if you have one guy kind of standing out by himself, it's not much of a quote-unquote destination. So when there's three of us that close together, you know, it kind of draws people to that area, and then they stop and have a beer at each location. So it works out good for all of us.
So when I was younger, we would watch these Schoolhouse Rock videos, okay? So how a bill gets made, and they would put some fun music to it. When you pour me a glass of beer and it's in my glass, how does that beer get made? I'm sure you don't have some fun songs. I don't know, maybe you do. But to take us through that process of how it gets from the hops and all the ingredients to actually getting in my glass.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely sing a lot while we brew beer.
I didn't know where you were going with that, Tyler. I was like, what?
It works out good. You know, mixture of Fergie. Well, never mind. But it's a pretty simple process, but yet it's not. There's a lot of quote-unquote science or chemistry that goes into it. So, you know, you got a big tank at the beginning of the process that acts like a hot water tank in your house. You know, we got to bring water, filtered water, up to a certain temperature. You move it into the next piece of the puzzle or the next step into the next pot, and that's where we add all of our different grains and barleys and things like that. And then it'll kind of sit in there. It has to maintain a certain temperature to drop all the good stuff out of that grain, right? Call it sugars and different chemicals that we need to make the beer. So it'll hang out in there for an hour at the proper temperature, and then we pump it into the next tank. We call it a boil kettle, and that's where we'll bring the water, or the wort as we call it, up to a boil, and it'll hang out in there at a boil for, you know, depending on what you're making, an hour or two, and then that's where you add all your hops. So that's where you get your aroma and your bittering and your different flavors on top of the grain. So that'll hang out in there for a while. And then from there, it's chilled and put into a fermentation tank. And it'll hang on that fermentation tank depending on what you're making from, you know, 2 weeks to 6 months, you know, whatever whatever style of beer you're making, and that's where you'll add your yeast, and that's kind of where you get your alcohol. The yeast goes to work in there and attacks all that fun stuff and creates the alcohol in the beer. And then from there, our tanks are glycol jacketed, so we can cold crash it, kind of drops the yeast out of the beer to the bottom, and then we can keg the beer off and put it in the cooler.
And you're doing that all right there in Center
Everything
Township.
We do is right there in Center Township, right inside our building. Yeah, so we do buy whole grain, so we have a mill that will mill our own grain. From start to finish, it never leaves the property. It kind of adds a nice character to folks when they're standing there having a beer and looking at the equipment and saying, "Yeah, that was made right there, and it was made last week." You know, we know it's fresh, and we can taste the difference.
I think people like that.
Oh yeah, no question. Like you said, the difference between a big box, brewery, and the difference with you guys is you can see it. You know someone is standing over top of it and brewing it, and this isn't machine done. At least most of it isn't.
Correct.
So when you come up with these, how often do you develop new beer flavors?
Yeah.
Oh, often. I mean, it's...
Because you have 10 beers on tap.
Yeah, we have a 10-tap system, so it's always rotating. We probably can do, 30 or 40 beers at any... Right now, if I had to give you our recipe book. So I just 2 weeks ago, I don't remember where Toby was at in the country, and he came back and told Nathan what he had that was really, really good. And, so Nate sat down with his chemistry set and his abacus and worked out all this stuff. And we have a raspberry goza right now that's in fermentation. So hopefully it'll come out in the next week or two. So
cool. It's almost trial and error? Or do you have an idea behind it?
No.
Okay.
No, we try not to have error.
it's trial?
You don't know it's error until it's too late. It's already in the keg, right? Mm. So that's something Nathan's very good at. He can sit down and put the quote-unquote recipe on paper, and he can work it forward and then work it backwards and make sure that the math lines up, if you will, that the flavors are going to be right, and, he's going to add the hops at this time, at this temperature, and it's going to give him this flavor. So he does a good job with that.
I know that you guys, you're new, but you've already decided to give back to the community, and I know that's important to you and your partners. I understand you have one beer on tap that you donate a portion of the proceeds to. You pick a different charity every quarter or so.
Sure,
talk about that.
Sure, yeah. So we're all very involved in the community, as you had mentioned earlier. So Toby and I both volunteer with the fire department. We're both fire chiefs. Takes a good bit of time, but it's rewarding time. It's one of those you get out of the community what you put into the community kind of thing. So really proud to be part of that organization. But so we've always been very involved in local community stuff and fundraising and things of that nature. And it just pay it forward kind of thing, help those that need help kind of thing. So we sat down and said, what can we do? It would kind of be our own unique recon way to give back instead of just writing a check every once in a while and saying, oh yeah, we want to support you. So we come up with this idea of a charity tap, and nobody really liked that word. So we thought, well, how about karma tap? Because I think it all comes around in the end. So we have this karma tap, and every quarter. So we've only had two of them now. The first one we did, we donated 15% of sales. So all the sales for that beer, 15% of that went towards the flood relief for the city whenever we had the rising waters there a few months back. And on this one here, we actually partnered with Future POS next to us. And Kelly's very involved with the life steps, that's very important to her. So she kind of picked out the flavor of beer that she wanted, and she kind of helped Nate with some of the process of brewing it. And now at the end of December, January, we'll write a check for 15% and take it over to the life steps. Mm-hmm. So I think we have our charities or our nonprofits kind of picked for 2018. Obviously there's only three of them, four of them, if you're doing it every quarter. So, we want to support the Unionville Fire Department right down the street from us. Those are good guys. And a couple other organizations that we're excited to do. But it's kind of neat when folks come in and see that and they say, oh, where's the donation going through this time? And, yeah, this beer is good. And
yeah.
So it's kind of fun.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Coming back full circle.
You
can go up, buy a beer local. It's going to help somebody local.
I was going to ask, because you had mentioned, Butler supporting local businesses. Do you find as a local business owner that other local businesses are willing to help each other out?
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to sound like a radio commercial, but, when we did the fence, around the patio, we have an outdoor patio. Hartman was really helpful and I can't think of the Jim's last name that did the concrete for us, and Martin's fireplace. We got a fire pit in the back patio there that we light at night. Adam was just tremendous at coming up and helping us put it together and install it. And so, yeah, the local business community, even Bill at the Chop Shop, is a big help to us. I just I think I always have a question for him every time I see him. So.
Well, it said you didn't want to do the radio commercial. The pipes aren't bad, Dave. I'm going to be honest. You got a deep voice. I like it. I think you could be translating it into another fourth career here if you keep it up.
Yeah, he needs another one.
We're talking with Dave Bestwick. He's a co-owner of Recon Brewery up at on Route 8 North Main Street.
I want to talk about the hop prices because I know that was in national news a couple weeks ago. It kind of scared me because they were like, hop prices are going up, your beer's going to go up. And I was like, what? Wait a second. Have you run into any trouble with that?
We haven't yet. We try to be a little bit ahead on our hop buy, our hop purchases. You know, I think a lot of folks kind of saw this coming over the last few months. So we've kind of planned ahead. We have a plan in place to move forward. You know, we're hoping it's not a long-term, forever kind of situation. We're hoping the market corrects itself. But, you know, at this point, obviously, hops are very important. That's where you get your flavors and your bittering and your aroma, you know, that you're smelling while you're drinking the beer. So very important part of the process. But it right now, you know, as far as Recon's concerned, we're not in a bad way. So we're a step ahead of it.
Where do you see the brewery going for you?
You know, that's funny. I'm a little bit of an obsessive compulsive person. So I have a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan, a 7-year plan, a 10-year plan, up to 20 years. So I have a 20-year window that we look at. And I'd really like to tell you I had it all figured out before we opened the door and the plan was going to work perfect. But the plan's changed, you know, in 7 months. The plan's probably changed 7 times. So, you know, I'd love to tell you in the next 5 to 10 years we're adding locations and, you know, we got a lot more full-time staff and we're hiring more people and everyone's really excited to come to work. And I would tell you the sky's the limit at this point. I mean, the response has been tremendous. The community's really supportive. The patrons really enjoy coming in and spending their money. So it's been very good for us thus far. We're still pretty new into the game, though. So I don't know what the future holds. I think it's going to be good. I think Butler will always be a community that wants to support, you know, local brews and local businesses.
I'll be anxious to see just where local breweries go in the future because, I mean, they're just so popular now. And I don't think they ever will go away. I mean, I know me and Tyler are typical millennials. We like going to local breweries. I was telling you, I'd rather do that. But I'll be anxious to see if that'll continue or, you know, if it'll ebb and flow.
Do you have a feel for it? Do you have a feel for where it's going to go?
Well, I think if you study history, it cycles, right? I mean, microbreweries pop up, and they grow and grow and grow and grow and grow, and then the big guys get mad, and they come in and start buying up the microbreweries, mm-hmm. you know. Way back when it was Blue Moon and Line and Kugel and Yingling and, you know, all these other quote-unquote smaller guys got swallowed up by the big boys because they were tired of competing with them. So mm-hmm. I think you're starting to see that cycle come back around now where there weren't a lot of good small choices. So, you know, the Butler Brew Works and the Reclamations and the Recons and the North Countries, you know, they said, you know what, I can do this and I think I can do it well. So, you know, maybe that cycle history will repeat itself once mm-hmm. more. But I mean, you look at a guy like Bob McCafferty, who's been open for 15 years now. I don't know. I'd have to ask him.
That sounds right.
Right.
Yeah. He's not slowing down.
No, I mean, my goodness, that guy's kind of plowing along there. So mm-hmm. and we True. Always enjoy talking to him. There again, every time you talk to him, you have 5 questions you want to ask
yeah.
him, because you're trying to suck up as much knowledge from him as you can. But so there's a good example of a business that, you know, met a need in the community and has sustained mm-hmm. itself really well mm-hmm. and continued to grow.
He's Dave Bestwick, Recon Brewing, North Main Street. Make sure you check him out. You guys are open tonight. You guys are open Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, we're open Wednesday through Sunday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
We'll be up.
Go up and get a
Cheers.
Beer.
Cheers.
Yeah, let's have one.
All right. Oh, that won't be a problem. When we come back after this, Tracy Morgan's going to take over, and she's going to talk obsessive compulsive disorder with some folks from Butler Memorial Hospital. Their department, behavioral health department that focuses on mental health. That conversation will come up next right here on WISR 680 AM.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Good afternoon. I'm Tracy Morgan with It's Your Turn. Yes, another day. I know the whole team is pitching in, and it takes four of us to cover Dave's shift, so I'm going to take the helm here for just a little bit, for a half an hour with you. And, of course, Dave will be back here shortly from his vacation. But thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. What I'm going to focus on today is something that a lot of people would just call OCD. It's called obsessive compulsive disorder, and especially because we're near the holidays. And I always, two ways of thoughts on this. I think the holidays are important to focus on because I think a lot of conditions can be enhanced during the holidays because of the exhaustion and nervousness and the busyness. But really, this kind of information really needs to be thought of all year long. Obsessive compulsive disorder, what is it? What does it look like? We'll talk about that here in just a moment. If you want to listen to us online, you are more than welcome to do that. If you have to leave us, you got the app. So online, it's WISR680.com. The app is on your smartphone, just like any other app. You get in there and you can download that for free and you can take us with you. And then on Alexa powered devices. So if you have Alexa, Dot, Echo, whatever you have with Alexa, you can just say, Alexa, play WISR 680, and then you can listen to us on your Alexa-powered device. So, and that's also all live as we're talking. So you have some options as you want to listen today as well as on the radio, of course. So, all right, so with us is Skyla Hartman. She is a social worker with the Butler Health Systems Family Service focusing on behavioral health. They're in a different building. They're owned by the hospital, but they're on North Washington Street. And we're going to talk about how you can get an appointment and take advantage of their services in a moment. But first, Skyla, welcome to the program. It's nice to have you here today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And I really want to get into this OCD because it's interesting to me where if somebody mentions OCD, it seems like, well, one, other people don't know how to respond, which I feel is kind of typical when, you know, somebody doesn't know enough about a particular condition. But the other thing I hear a lot is, oh, yeah, I like my hands clean, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and so there's a misconception about what OCD is. So how would you describe, what's your definition of obsessive compulsive disorder?
Well, I would say, firstly, we all kind of have our own OCD type tendencies. So, I mean, hopefully we're all checking the stove and the oven a few times to make sure it's off, you know, before we leave the house, or like my hair straightener, you know, I check that a few times before I leave the house, and locking doors. So those are normal behaviors, for people, but when it gets to a diagnosable level of obsessive compulsive disorder is when you have, obsessions and or compulsions. So you at least have to have the obsessions to have a diagnosable OCD diagnosis.
Well, and I want to get into both of those together because then together they combined OCD, obsessive and compulsive. When you say that, yes, it's normal for us to check the oven or check the lock on the door, isn't there a difference, though, between I have to check it 15 times before I can move on with my day versus I've checked it once, let me just check again, and then I can move on?
Oh, absolutely. So according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, if you spend longer than an hour per day on the obsessions, then that is one of the criteria for it to be diagnosable. So normally, you know, you might spend a few minutes checking something in your home, and that's completely, that is normal. That's not going to be a diagnosable disorder right there.
All right, so let's break this down then, because obsessive compulsive disorder, you have compulsions, you have obsessions, you just mentioned that. Mm-hmm. So let's go with the compulsions first. How do you define that?
So compulsions are repetitive behaviors that someone feels they must do, and that's in response to any of the obsessive thoughts that they have. So that would be like the excessive hand cleaning that you mentioned. Some people do obsessive counting, so they might have a specific number of times they have to, you know, count all the cracks on the wall before they were able to leave a room or something like that. Or, you know, checking the door, like you said, like 15 times. So it is, it's very obsessive. And that compulsion is in hopes that the person doing that will relieve some intense anxiety that they have, responding to the obsession. So the compulsions are what they do in response to the thoughts they have to try and rid themselves of that intense anxiety that they get.
Can it also be a compulsion to satisfy a need that maybe somebody thinks they're preventing something in life from happening?
Oh, absolutely. So some people obsess, like, if they don't do something, they feel like they're going to die, or someone else is going to die. Or if we get into religion, you know, people feel like, well, if I don't do this, then God's going to, you know, do something horrible to me. So yeah, definitely engage in certain compulsions or rituals, we can call them too, to feel like they're preventing something from happening, even though it may be extremely irrational.
And again, rituals in this case would be just doing something over and over.
Yes.
Or a set way.
Yeah, and that's just very individual to the person.
Sure.
That has the disorder.
All right, so then let's move on to the obsessions. How do you define that?
So obsessions are repeated thoughts, urges, can be like mental images that you're having, and they must cause you extreme anxiety when you think about them. So some of the most common ones are fear of germs, any sort of contamination. There's a lot of people with a disorder that fear dirt. And then having things in perfect or symmetrical order are the most common. And then there's also certain obsessions people have that can be like unwanted or forbidden thoughts. So, you know, thinking about hurting themselves or thinking about hurting others, not necessarily acting on them, but they can't get that image out of their brain.
Now, can you have a range of severity? And when I ask that, what I'm thinking of is, okay, maybe I just need to have my hands clean. Okay, fine. But then there are individuals that I understand can't even get out of their house. Mm-hmm. So is that a range that you look for?
Yes, I would say most people with the disorder, that kind of ebbs and flows over time. So definitely in more times of stress, like over the holidays, for example, when people are feeling more, you know, financially strained or depressed or things like that, their symptoms are definitely going to be worse when they are stressed out. And, you know, we always encourage people as soon as they're feeling really any level of distress that's interfering with their daily life, you know, work, school, their personal relationships, we encourage them to seek help at that point before things get worse, so that hopefully, you know, with some interventions and even medications, that it doesn't get to the point where you can't leave your house.
Now, because there are two different words associated with this disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, do you have to have both to be diagnosed, or can you only have one and still be diagnosed with OCD?
So you have to have the obsessions part of the disorder. You don't have to have the compulsions, although most people do have some sort of compulsions or, you know, some reaction to the images that they're having in their head to try to rid themselves of them. It's just a normal, you know, when we feel a certain way, we try and do something to prevent from feeling that way.
So how many people across the country have OCD? I don't know if you have stats with you, or even in Pennsylvania, in our area. I mean, what are the stats like in those affected with this particular condition?
I'm not 100% sure on this, but I did read recently, I think it's somewhere between like 1% and 2%. And that's probably based on the people that seek help. So if there's people not seeking help, then we wouldn't be able to include them in those statistics. But for the people seeking help, I do believe it's somewhere between 1% and 2% of the population.
And what I wanted to do today is point out the fact that people with OCD, and I hate the word normal because what's normal, right? You know, mm-hmm. but there is a level that, that people look at and a standard, a healthy mm-hmm. way of living, we'll just yeah. put it that way. That there are people that have a healthy life but yet still have OCD. Mm-hmm. Is that not true?
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, people can have a variety of mental disorders and still be able to function.
Because there's a stigma, isn't there, whenever we even say mental disorder, people shut down right there, and there's a stigma associated with that. Can you talk about the stigma for a moment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a huge stigma. I do think it's getting better, especially with, you know, more focus on veterans and their issues with mental illness. I think that's helped us kind of address some of the stigma across our nation and across the world. But I do think that's still a problem. I mean, some people, you know, are very reluctant to seek help for anything. So I think depression and anxiety is becoming less stigmatized. More people are seeking help for that. But like you said, OCD, we think, oh my gosh, this person is probably locked up in their house, washing their hands until they bleed every day, or, you know, counting things repeatedly. I mean, I remember watching like an MTV program, and that's, they showed like the worst of the worst. And it's not always like that. You know, I have clients in outpatient therapy who, they don't always have the symptoms of OCD. They can come up again when they're like more stressed out. They have more environmental stressors going on. You know, they have a death in the family. Anything that affects their overall mood can contribute to their level of OCD issues.
And when you talk about seeing the worst of the worst on television, mm-hmm. it's amazing to me on how there are people with OCD you never even know.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Because it is mm-hmm. a silent thing sometimes for individuals, because as you're saying, they're counting. Well, they're counting in their head.
Right.
Well, maybe not all, but mm-hmm. you know, most of the time people are counting in their head, or they're saying the same, you know, phrase or prayer or whatever it is in their head.
Right.
It's not something that you see outwardly. So is that a detriment to people whenever they're trying to heal, that they feel that they can conceal this? Is it easier for someone to move forward in life and past this mm-hmm. if they're able to identify it and, in a sense, own it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if they can own it and they're willing to get as much support as possible, that's the best thing. So, I mean, we notice, you know, our family and friends notice things that we're doing that we might not even notice. So having a good support system and people who know what's going on with you is very important, because they can kind of point things out and then be there to help you get better. And also, you know, support groups are great too. There's even so many online ones now, that's kind of great. So, you know, Butler, we don't have a ton of resources. I wish we had more resources in terms of mental health and, you know, funding and things like that. But even online, you can find online support groups for pretty much any mental disorder, which I think is pretty great.
With me right now is Skyla Hartman. She's a social worker with the Butler Health Systems Family Services, the behavioral health department, if you will. And we're focusing on OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which is, I say, an interesting condition, because the word is thrown around so loosely, but yet those who don't deal with it don't really understand it. And my question is, what causes this? I've heard of a couple of theories, but then I also hear experts say, but we're not sure. That's kind of tough
right.
for somebody with OCD to hear.
Yeah, it is, because you don't have clear-cut answers or really the possibility of a cure at this point. So they do, scientists are pretty sure that if you have a first generation parent that has the disorder, you are more likely to get the disorder. So there is some hereditary factor. There are differences in the brain that show up, but that's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg. We're not really sure if the differences were there before the OCD or after the OCD, because there hasn't been enough studies done yet to prove that. And also trauma So physical or sexual trauma. And this is true
for... Or emotional? Could emotional trauma go in there as well?
Sure. I mean, okay. I think pretty much when you have physical or sexual, it's going to lead to emotional as well. But that exacerbates any mental disorder. So that's a contributing factor for sure. I think environmentally too, you know, maybe how you've lived as a child, if you were in a place of neglect, very dirty, you know, not feeling like you could ever get clean, things like that. I think that can obviously, I don't know if
contribute
I can say
in
cause,
some way.
Yes,
okay.
contribute mm-hmm. to having
okay.
OCD.
Okay. And genetics, do they play a big role if you have a family history of, I say again, mental illness? And I don't like using the terms because, of course, there's a stigma to that.
Right.
You know, whether it's OCD or schizophrenia or bipolar or, you know, if there's a family history of something in the family, does that put you at a greater, I'm not sure if risk is the right word, but at a higher level of the opportunity of ending up with OCD?
Yeah, I would say so. I don't know how much or what percentage that is, but they have found links. Again, if only we had, you know, more money to do
sure,
the studies
right?
and
yeah.
prove these things,
yeah.
it would be great.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the holidays in particular for a moment, because the holidays are here. I mean, you
yeah.
say November and everybody jumps right in, right? So how can the holidays affect somebody with OCD?
So kind of what I was thinking was what I do around the holidays. So I know people have their own traditions and do things like bake a lot of cookies, you know, cook special things, go shopping, do gift wrapping, things like that. So if you have OCD and you have a fear of contamination and you're going shopping, for example, that would be extremely stressful and anxiety provoking with someone who has OCD, because the fear of germs, you know, everywhere, that would probably be extremely, extremely stressful for the person. And out in public, you know, it's not like you're able to just
get away from the,
yeah, get away
what's
from
your surroundings,
or,
yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. be able to do your ritual or your compulsion to kind of rid yourself of that anxiety. So shopping would be difficult. I think about wrapping presents and the fact that some people with OCD have to feel like everything needs to be perfect, everything needs to be in order. So I'm picturing someone who has OCD wrapping, rewrapping, wrapping, rewrapping, because it's just not good enough in their brain. So I thinking about that, you know, makes me feel a little anxious for the person.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to like baking and cooking, again, with feeling like you can never get clean. So some people probably just, you know, wash their hands before they start cooking and as needed throughout, while a person who is suffering from OCD is just repeatedly, you know, trying to cleanse themselves and relieve that anxiety that they get, and probably not always able to complete the task that they want to, which causes more frustration and stress for them.
Skyla, we only have a little over 10 minutes with you left, and I don't want to lose the sight of treatment and that somebody can live a regular life and be out there, and they do it well. So let's talk about treatments or options that we can undergo if we have OCD of how to get through. I'm going to take the shopping first of all, because again, shopping, whether you're holiday shopping or food shopping or clothes shopping, shopping is shopping. And that can be stressful in itself for anybody, but
I agree.
So how does one get through a shopping trip if they do have OCD? Because if you're talking germs, they're really all around. And I mean, if you have a bag and you can't have like two items in the same bag, or if you're talking numbers, now maybe there's not four items in the same bag, you know, so how does somebody get through shopping?
I think it depends
on... Or can that be used in therapy?
Sure. I think that that can be used in therapy. One of the types of therapy that should be utilized is exposure therapy. And this requires homework and a lot of practice, because you want to start out small. You don't want to cause the person more harm by causing them more distress than they already had. So say that someone has a fear of dirt. you would start off the exposure therapy very small, so maybe having them sit in a place they feel is dirty for 30 seconds to a minute, then processing that afterwards and working on coping skills to relieve that anxiety that they get from that. And then from there on, you would increase that over time. And also, you know, it's good to include their family members and support system in that as well, so that they can practice those skills at home. As for shopping, at this day and age, I think if someone is unable to get to the store, you know, Walmart has the whole the pickup thing, which is great, and Amazon is starting to do the pantry delivery things, which doesn't fix the problem, but also is able, you know, it's able to have people get the things they need while they are getting treatment.
So you call that exposure therapy. What other therapies are available?
I really like cognitive behavioral therapy. It's evidence-based, and it works on trying to first identify the irrational thoughts that you're having. So most people who are suffering from OCD know that these obsessions they have are irrational. They know they're too much. They know they're not normal, but they can't stop them at this point. So cognitive behavioral therapy is identifying those and then working with a therapist to change the way they think. And if you change the way you think, then you can change the way you act. So that also requires homework. So reframing the negative thoughts into more positive ones. So a lot of people feel if they do not engage in a compulsion that they honestly feel like they might die, or, you know, just feel like so much doom and gloom would come over them, or that it's going to hurt their family members. I mean, worst case scenarios come through their head if they do not engage in that compulsion. So cognitive behavioral therapy works to kind of talk them through that. What if this happened? Your family probably wouldn't die. So working with exposure therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy can show these individuals that they will survive through this. And it just takes a lot of practice. It's time consuming, but it does work. And also medications. So similar medications to what you would take for depression. Obviously, probably in different dosages, just according to what your psychiatrist would recommend. But some things like Paxil, Prozac, and Zoloft are commonly prescribed. Also, anti-anxiety medications while you're in therapy, you know, like Xanax, Klonopin, Ativan. I wouldn't recommend that for long-term use or a cure or anything like that. But I do believe in a combination of medications and therapy.
Well, medication, is that really solving the problem? It's not taking away the OCD, is it? What's the medication doing?
So if you're taking an SSRI, which is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, it can allow you to have time to slow down and think rather than have your brain racing and, you know, constant thoughts running through your head, those negative thoughts that people have who are suffering from OCD. So I think it's not a cure, but it can help people be able to focus more in therapy and learn the coping skills that they need to decrease the OCD type symptoms.
Is it a benefit or is it a deterrent if family members get involved? And when I say that, what I'm thinking of is there are some people who welcome the support of family members and welcome the support of having people hold them accountable, and that helps them along. Then there are other people who say, you know, you're my wife, husband, girlfriend, brother, sister, your son, whatever. You don't tell me what to do.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
And so there are people in both camps. So what do you see, and can you speak to that on how the family can get involved, or is it beneficial for someone to hold you accountable that you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it depends on what the family member's like, because obviously we all have family members who are not that helpful. So providing family members with psychoeducation on what OCD is, what your family member's going through, and how you can help them. And then if that person feels like oh, this is probably a good person to help in my life or help me in my life and hold me accountable, I would definitely agree that they should be in your life and help you be accountable. But also, people who are suffering from OCD, they need some space sometimes. This is a very difficult thing to have to go through and live your life. So even just, you know, saying, hey, let's go for a walk. You need to get out of your head for a minute. Or let's do this. Trying to do rather than think can be helpful. So friends and family can assist you with that. But yeah, I just think it depends on what family member sure. it is and how helpful they are. And definitely they need to have knowledge of what this condition is like and how you can help and not hurt.
I would think that's where a support group could be important yes. because a support group could have members a part of it that understand whether it's an OCD support group or if it's just that general life support group. They mm-hmm. understand how support groups run and how to accept and how to talk with. I mean, so could a support role kind of, I don't want to say take the place of the family, but maybe in a situation, like you said, if a family member is not helping
yeah,
because
definitely.
They don't know how to help,
right?
Maybe a support group would be the answer.
Yeah, I fully believe in support groups because it's other people who know exactly what you're going through. So those are great resources to have.
Because what are the things that people with OCD don't want to hear? I mean,
just stop it.
You know, deal with it. I mean, what are the other things?
Why are you doing this? Just stop. I don't understand. People getting really impatient with them. That's not helpful. You know, it's more frustrating because they do just want to stop doing it, but it's not that simple, unfortunately.
In the realm of alcoholics and support mm-hmm. groups, I've heard it said before that if you're an alcoholic, the whole family is in a way because they're having to deal with mm-hmm. the condition as well. Does that hold true for OCD or any kind of mental illness where if you have it, the whole family has to deal with it in some way?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure it can be frustrating for family members who have someone in their family with OCD because they are like, I don't understand what's going on. Why can't you just leave the house? You know, why are you in the bathroom for half an hour just washing your hands? So education is very important for everyone, really. So I'm really glad to be here today to try to provide some more education on this subject, too.
So the education is important, the help is important, and Skyla, before we run out of time, this is Skyla Hartman with the BHS, the Butler Health System Family Services Department, the Behavioral Services. How can we get in touch with the Butler Hospital or the Mental Health Department or Behavioral Health Services, however you want to term it, in order to ask questions or be a part of a support group or take advantage of the services?
Oh, absolutely. So we do outpatient therapy at Family Services through the Butler Health System. We're located on 216 North Washington Street. You would just call our regular number and say that you would like services. From that point on, our nurse takes referrals, gathers a little bit of information. We make sure that you're appropriate for the services. You know, that you might not need or you might need more intensive services if you're suicidal or something like that. So we would make sure you're appropriate. And then from that point on, we would schedule an intake with you and try and match people with different therapists just based on, you know, personalities and what they're good at and things like that.
Do they have to meet criteria to a certain degree? Because, again, there's a difference between somebody who may just like something clean. I mean, mm-hmm. that's normal. I like to clean my house.
Sure.
But there's a difference when I want to clean it for 4 hours and mm-hmm. it's the same room or the same spot.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to be a joke or say it jokingly, but so how do you determine when somebody really does need your services?
I think any point where they are feeling distressed, I think most people can utilize therapy, to be honest with you, whether it's something, you know, they feel is small. If it's affecting your life negatively, you can seek out services. So if you start to feel like you're washing your hands a little bit too much or something like that, I mean, I would call because it's better to be proactive and get services and maybe not need them, then not have services when you really, really need them.
it brings to mind when you mention the family member asking why, mm-hmm. and the person's in the bathroom washing their hands over and over and over, and the family member is saying, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. How often is it the person with the OCD is also saying the same things?
Right, because they know it's irrational, so that it happens all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Skyline, just the last minute that we have with you, just want to get your final thoughts. Just the importance of education and help, and there is help, and people can live a regular life mm-hmm. along with OCD.
Yeah, and I think it's important to for people to just realize that nobody wants to live their life like this. Nobody wants to be anxious all the time and, you know, feel awful because they have to engage in these behaviors to even feel better for a few seconds.